Do you or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
I get a zillion management and leadership books, and to be honest, they make me puke. They end up saying kind of the same things all the time, or they create these complicated models that really are just trying to create some gravitas around some common sense. And yet we all strive to be better managers, better leaders, whether even if we are have a very small sphere of influence, managers of our home, managers of our daily lives, managers of one or two other people at work or in your volunteer work. So in the relentless search for something that is not crappy and obvious, I got excited when I saw the Harvard Business Review's 10 must reads. These are articles, not massive tomes. There were somebody's trying to make a lot of money from the book, but it's just an article. And I figured this would be the best. And it was written by like truly the all-star team of quote experts on management and leadership. Daniel Goleman, that's the emotional intelligence guy. Peter Drucker, who is truly this guru. I don't know if he's still alive, but he's written like 9 zillion books. John Kotter, Ronald Heifetz at Harvard, Jim Collins, the guy who's from the Good to Great guy. So I think if anywhere there would be some wisdom that is worthy of you, my dear listeners, it would reside in the Harvard Business Review's 10 must reads. And one of the things they always tell you to do is to delegate. So I decided to delegate this. I delegated the reading of it to an actual leader, an actual manager and leader. And it's my very favorite manager and leader in the world. And it's not just because she's my wife, but she's been recognized. She's won all kinds of now national awards for being one of the top superintendents in the nation, school superintendents. So Barbara Nemko, Dr. Barbara Nemko, happy Mother's Day and welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad you consider me the person to delegate to.
Well, you're the only one who'll do it. I can't get anybody else to do it, so it's got to be you.
Thank you.
You know, one of the things I'm really grateful to have listeners who give me feedback on what they like and don't like about the show. And one of the things they've liked about our show is when I give you quizzes. And also when we do these debates where we take one side and then we switch in the middle and each take the other side. So, but I think I haven't been fair to you. I've been the one giving you quizzes, and I'll give you one a little later. But I thought it would be fun to start, rather than just presenting the content in the book. I asked you, part of the delegation, not only to read the book, but to come up with a 5-question quiz that would ask me about some of the key content. I don't know if the listeners are going to trust me that I have not seen this quiz. I have no idea what's in it. Are you ready to give me your quiz that will hopefully elucidate some useful content about management and leadership?
Sure.
Go for it.
And I can swear that you haven't seen the book because I took the shrink wrap off it this week and it's been in my possession ever since.
And the quiz. You've not told me the quiz questions either.
But before I do that, I think the opening paragraph is very compelling for this book, and it is the Daniel Goleman chapter, and he says, what makes a leader? Every business person knows a story about a highly intelligent, highly skilled executive who was promoted into a leadership position only to fail at the job. Mm-hmm. And they also know a story about someone with solid but not extraordinary intellectual abilities and technical skills who was promoted into a similar position and then soared.
Right.
And that in itself is sufficient reason for somebody to want to take a look at this book, although there are more than 2,000 books on leadership that were published just last year alone.
Wow.
Yeah, it's kind of scary.
So what it does, though, it gives it a little hope that you don't need to be this 160 IQ super genius in order to be a great leader, I guess, is the message of that paragraph.
Exactly.
So fair enough.
Since most of us are not 160 IQ geniuses,
right,
it gives us not only hope, but a strong sense that we can be very successful.
Before we get to you ask me the quiz, I do have to ask you one question. You know, you looked through a lot of this book. I don't know, you read probably much of it. I don't know about all of it. You know, you are a manager and leader, and, you know, I am saying this not to brag about my wife, but it also gives you some real legitimate credibility with the listeners. You were just evaluated for your salary, and there was a 500-point scale that had a million questions, and the board of the
No, it was, I'm sorry, it was 25-point scale.
25 points. But why did you tell me you scored 499.5 out of 500, by the way, when the school
24.9.
board? 24.9. Okay, so you scored 24.9 out of 25. So you were already pretty darn good, at least in the eyes of the school board. Did you learn a single thing about management and leadership from reading this book that you're actually going to implement?
Oh, there's a good question. I learned a lot of things that I have done unconsciously and sometimes have been challenged in doing them that were validated by some of the authors in the book. But recognize, when you have a compendium like this and you have all different people and they're all talking about the same topic, they're all approaching it differently and may not always agree. But one of the things that I have had people question over the many years that I have been in this position is the use of self-deprecating humor.
Mm-hmm.
People who said to me, "You're a woman, don't put yourself down."
Mm-hmm.
And this book absolutely validated for me that that is one of the qualities of being successful.
Flesh that out. Why is being self-deprecating? Well, you said that there are many experts, and especially women's advocates, who say that women should not put themselves down, it demeans them. Why is that a good aspect of leadership?
Because it makes you human. People don't want to be taking direction from an automaton. And in the same way that I recognize that I'm not this 160 IQ super genius, when you are able to laugh at yourself and put yourself down, then it makes the people that are working with you recognize that they too can be leaders. Everybody isn't going to be have the top position in the organization, but people within their departments and divisions are going to take various leadership roles, some on the organizational chart and some informally. And we all want to work with people we like, and we want to make sure that people we like are being successful. If you are coming across as being so self-confident, then we can't relate to you, and frankly, we'd like to see you fall on your face.
Might it be you who have so much credibility, you could afford a little self-deprecation, and there's still a huge reservoir of perceived excellence. If somebody is more of an average performer who is lower in the hierarchy, can that person really use the same advice?
Yes, but you're obviously, when we say some self-deprecating humor, we're not talking about putting yourself down all the time. We're talking about occasionally sharing some perceived weakness that other people can relate to.
Yeah, the one I love, of course, you were named one of the 40 leading technology experts in as superintendents, and you put yourself down all the time for being a techno non-genius.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, let's get to the quiz. So ask me these questions, and hopefully it will, for our listeners, elucidate what are some of the more important points that may be not obvious about management and leadership that is in that book, the Harvard Business Review's 10 Must-Reads on Leadership.
Okay, so in the area of emotional intelligence, he talks about 5 different components of EQ. I'm not going to ask you to name all 5.
Thank God.
I know, because you would fail that quiz.
Completely.
Which would be kind of fun. But I'm going to tell you what they are.
Okay.
Self-awareness, self-regulation, motivation, empathy, and social skill. Those are the 5.
Yeah.
And he says that the last 2, empathy and social skill, are the things that people usually think can't be learned. So my question to you is, can they be learned, and if so, how?
Good question. This is not a quiz question as much as a thoughtful question. So empathy, how can you gain more empathy?
Well, if you want empathy? A quiz question, I could have asked you to name the 5, so
right.
I'll find something else and you can name 4 of them.
Empathy. I think everything, there's everything in humankind is part hardwired and part learned, and so I always come to things with that view. There are people who are naturally more empathic than others, but I think if I were to try to get one of my clients to be more empathic, what I'm asking them to do is to, forgive the cliche, is to walk a mile in the other person's moccasins, to think about what they must be feeling like at that moment, and at least take that into consideration, which should help them feel more empathic. And in terms of social skills, you know, some of it is begging for feedback. You can watch other people who are socially excellent, and it doesn't mean that you're necessarily going to rub off. But I do think that asking for specific feedback, there is a website that I love very much. It's called Checkster.com, and it has a free talent checkup where you can ask 3 to 8 people for their anonymous feedback on whatever, including social skills. So I think that by asking for specific examples of where you are demonstrating poor social skills, that is the stuff of which growth could occur. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. And I think that in addition to trying to imagine and putting yourself in the other people's shoes, which people who don't necessarily have an innate gift of empathy may not be able to do so well, what you can do and what they recommend that you do is bring a group together and ask them, what's frustrating you? Mm-hmm. How do you feel about your colleagues? When do you feel we're ignoring you? And then direct the team in a way that brings together what you learn from what they said. Encouraging people to talk and raise constructive complaints.
Okay, well, you know, I'm a goal-oriented person. This is a quiz. I mean, we did it a little different. Do you give me a check mark? Did I get my first question correct?
Or I would give you a A-.
Okay, why?
Because
I want an A.
Sorry. You're an overachiever. You want an A, but your idea of putting yourself in other people's shoes, people can't necessarily do that. So part of what you would have to do to help someone learn empathy would be to specifically ask them to go out, bring these people in, and start asking them questions.
You're a hard grader. Okay, ask me the second question.
Okay. In a chapter called The Work of Leadership, he talks about a leader who needed to have a triple bypass. Mm. And the surgeon said, you know, we can do that, but that's a technical fix.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It won't enable you to be better unless you also take responsibility to change your habits.
Mm-hmm.
So we can do the surgery, but if you don't stop smoking and improve mm-hmm. your diet and get some exercise and take some time to relax and breathe deeply, then all we can do is one piece, but you're not going to be better. And so what they're saying in this chapter is companies today face challenges similar to those kinds of things. They're adaptive changes. Today we need to make changes because of the way society has changed and markets have changed and customers and competition and technology. All these things are requiring us to change. How do you get people to make those kinds of adaptive changes when you're already in a company that's been fairly successful?
Right. I'm actually somebody who thinks that there is too much gyration for its own sake. Before it's fairly clear that the change is worth doing, we go and change something to show that we're proactive. And very often there is a big price that's paid for change. I'm not a fan of stasis, you know, that a successful company needs to stay doing exactly what it's done. But I think we don't adequately consider the human and fiscal costs of change. And so my real message would be, first, to a really good manager or leader is more fully assessing, how much stress will this put on my already stressed workforce? How sure are we that this change, whether it be some new piece of software or a new approach or a new sales technique or a new acquisition of a new company, you know, looking more carefully about whether change is worth it. And maybe I even start with one strike against the change because I know the change is difficult, expensive, and it takes time away from just doing your job very well. That said, if I'm going to try to recommend a change, we're talking now about managers and leaders, I'm going to make clear to the people who I'm going to be asking to change that I have very carefully considered this, and I realize that change is often we laugh at it. We make these changes, we kill ourselves, and then things are no better. Or we change and we go and change back. So I would make very clear once I made the deliberate, I was very deliberate about seeing whether the change was worth the time and effort, explaining my calculus so that they would understand that I wasn't being gratuitous and just trying to show how what an innovator I am. So that's how I think I would motivate people to change. And then I would make available, you know, I wouldn't force massive training necessarily. I would start with what is the least amount of training I can do that's not disruptive. So sometimes it's as simple as we've got our designated go-to person on this new software. Feel free to email, you know, work on it yourself and feel free to email him. Or maybe I'd have one quick workshop on it and then questions rather than this long, drawn-out process. I'd be very careful about the use of people's time and stress regarding change. Okay, what letter grade do I get for that one?
I'm going to give you an A on that one.
Thank you.
I think the other piece is obviously you're not going to change for the sake of change. You're going to change because you're in danger of being left behind. And I was at a workshop the other day with George Kouros, and he put up a picture of
who's
a bird.
George Kouros?
He's an education speaker. He's from Canada. He works a lot in the area of change. And
beware of speakers who don't do anything but go around and speak, but continue.
Well, no, he's a principal,
He's
been a technology leader in schools.
All right.
And he showed a picture of a bird that looked like the Twitter bird, and he said, if you don't know what this is, you are in danger of becoming irrelevant.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a hard lesson. Times
yep.
are changing very quickly. And for some of us, and this is why I laugh as me as a technology leader, the notion of Twitter seemed absurd only a few months ago. What on earth could anybody have to say in 140 characters that anybody else would care to hear about? And yet I decided I needed to jump in. And having done that, it is amazing how much you can mm-hmm. learn from mm-hmm. those 140 characters.
Yep.
And when you send out something that strikes you in your heart as being worth repeating, it's very gratifying when other people then retweet it or favorite it. So they're saying, wow, I really think that you hit the nail on the head by passing along this, and I'm going to pass it along too. And then your phone starts beeping. It's cool.
Speaking of phones beeping and gratification, this is probably as good a time as any. There is only a total of about 6 minutes in 6 months that I ask you, my dear listeners at KALW, to support Work with Marty Nemco and KALW. While money isn't everything, it is one of the main metrics, one of the main ways that the station decides whether to keep Work with Marty Nemco on the air or not, and Barbara Nemco, of course, who is with me every month. So if you are a fan of Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco, this is the time to call in. And, of course, we have various inducements to get you to contribute. Basic membership is $50. If you're a new member, you get this cool, new, nifty welcome pack. For just $10 more, and this, is, I think, is the bargain of it all, for $60, you get the membership pack and all that, and a free autographed copy of my latest book, How to Do Life, What They Didn't Teach You in School. $60 will get you that if you call 1-800-525-9917. That's 1-800-KALW-917, or you can go to KALW.org. But while that is the bargain, thank you gift, if whatever you want to call it, the most truly once-in-a-lifetime thing that you can't get anywhere else, and it's real, that's, you know, you always hear that kind of stuff, but it's true. If you do like Work with Marty Nemco and you would like to meet Barbara Nemco and Marty Nemco, you can do so on July 13th and come watch the show if you like. We'll be going back and forth as we're doing here, but Barbara will be in the studio. And then we stay for brunch. We'll have a brunch, and it's not like some cattle call. It's a fairly small number of people. You can give me your input. It's great networking, and it's great fun. That's $150 for one person, $250 for two people. So, and you're supporting Work with Marty Nemco, which, of course, I really appreciate very much. The phone number, 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917, or 1-800-KALW-917. Or if you don't want to talk with our lovely, friendly volunteers, you'd rather just interact with the computadora, KALW.org. I like to keep these really short. That's one of the wonderful things about KALW. We have respect for you, my dear listeners. We don't do 10-minute pledge breaks. But, Barbara, do you have something you'd like to add?
I do. I think we tend to take for granted the fact that this show is on the air, and so many people over the years have said that something they heard on the show really helped them either make their job better for them or get them a better job or a higher salary. And this is the one chance that you get to say thanks.
1-800-525-9917, 1-800-KALW-917. And, by the way, one other thing that, our station manager, Matt Martin, is trying, if we care about you, our members, so if you indeed pledge, you will be invited on June 11th to a party in San Francisco, and you'll get all kinds of information if you just, you know, it's fun, free food, meeting all of us and all the rest of that, good stuff. So, 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-KALW-917, or go to KALW.org. Now, I have procrastinated. You're giving me more quiz questions, but we are talking about the Harvard Business Review's 10 must-reads on leadership, and rather than just present content, Barbara has picked out some of the content that is most not obvious and interesting and is asking me quiz questions about them. I have not seen the quiz questions. And so, Barbara, go on with the next question.
Ah, okay. Here's a chapter by Robert Goffey and Gareth Jones called Why Should Anyone Be Led by You? Mm-hmm. And they start the chapter by saying, if you want to silence a room of executives, try this small trick. Ask them, why would anyone want to be led by you?
Hmm.
So, I ask you that question. Why would anyone want to be led by you? What is it that leaders have that would make people?
Well, you're asking about me, so I'll be, and I like to be as candid as I can be. There are reasons you'd want me to be your leader or manager, and there are reasons you wouldn't. The reasons you would is because nobody works harder and cares more. You wouldn't because I'm too intense. I can make people off-putted, and people have a fairly actually narrow range of tolerance. They want you to be enthusiastic. They want you to be upbeat. I'm not a pessimist, but I'm not an optimist either. I tend to be an intense realist. So that's why I think I would not make a good... And I'm not sufficiently tolerant of the variation in human beings. Human beings, you know, there are people who are brighter and less bright, more hardworking and less, and I don't have sufficient tolerance to work as a leader. So that's why you are the leader, and I'd rather work one-on-one with my clients or write articles and stuff. That's my honest answer. Any more thing you want to add or change to that before you give me my letter grade?
Well, you told us why you don't think that you would be a good leader in an organization, but what are the qualities that a good leader should have?
Well, I think everything is nuance in life. So I don't think it's simply being, you know, Mr. or Ms. Collaborative versus Mr. and Mrs. Authoritarian, being bold. I think it's nuance. It's situational. I think it's sometimes it's a matter of a great leader is certainly always has carefully thought through a vision for his or her domain, his organization, and then clearly articulates that vision and doesn't just talk the game but really walks the talk. If he expects other people to work hard, he or she is going to come in and work long and hard himself. It's somebody who is... this may sound silly, but kind of just everything we know is what it takes to be a good person. Somebody who, when they screw up, quietly but quickly admit they made a mistake, say they learn from it and move on. It's, people who have integrity, who are never going to let profits dominate ethics. People who treat workers, challenge them, and they can be fair, have high standards, but be a human being. I mean, it's just being a good human being who's smart and visionary and works hard. What do you think?
Well, I think as an answer, it's superb. According to this chapter, you would probably only get a C, but that's the weird thing about books like this. Everybody looks at the topic from their own different perspective, mm-hmm. and they pick the four things that they think are important, and any other chapter would have different things.
What's so, in the book? What does the book say?
Well, this chapter says the four qualities are, one, that you selectively show your weaknesses, Although they say don't expose a weakness that other people might consider fatal. You only want to show a weakness mm-hmm. that's not really a weakness. For example, pick a flaw that other people might consider a strength, like I'm a workaholic. Mm. So it's a weakness, but it's a strength. They say you should hone your ability to collect and interpret all the subtle interpersonal cues. So test your perceptions of what you think you're seeing, validate it with other people. Third is practice tough empathy. Care a lot about what your people are doing, but also don't necessarily give them what they think they want, but what they need to do their best.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And finally, daring to be different, to capitalize on what's unique about you that lets you signal your ability to be a leader and motivate others.
Let me throw that back to you. So what would you, Barbara Nemco, think is the key differentiating feature about you versus other equally competent managers and leaders?
That I know what I don't know. And I have other people do that for me. I'm not great at the internal making sure that every department and every person is humming along and following the strategic plan and checking in with them and doing all that. So I have a deputy superintendent who does that. I'm good at the going out part and explaining what the vision is that we're trying to do and getting people excited about trying new things. So I do more of that.
See, what I think is really the unique quality about you, and I'm not saying again this to praise my wife, even though it is Mother's Day. By the way, happy Mother's Day, everybody. I think it is the most important under-discussed aspect of great leadership. It is two things. It is your equanimity. You manage to be enthusiastic and energetic without ever having, you have no temper. You never, ever, when everybody else is getting upset, the pressure is on, it's the IRS or it's the, you're too, prince, somebody starting to sue you or whatever it is.
Yes, I have been tested.
You have been, but you are calm. You are always calm and yet upbeat. That is gold. And you're loaded with common sense. Your leadership is not the stuff of which models from theoretical textbooks from Professor Hassenpfeffer are born. You have just an unusual amount of common sense, and because you stay calm, you never lose that common sense. Would you agree that that is and your communication skills are excellent? If I said that's what quintessentially makes you this august, revered superintendent person winning all these awards, would you agree that that's at the essence of it?
Probably yes, and I am trying hard to keep learning new things in this ever-changing world.
What are you learning now?
What am I learning now? Social media is a big piece, and really working hard at the preschool level. That a lot of newer studies, not the old Head Start studies, but a lot of the newer studies are showing that investment does make a huge difference, that there is this enormous gap before children ever get to school. So the idea of blaming schools for creating an achievement gap is totally wrong.
All right.
It's come to school with an achievement gap. I'm trying to fix that.
Yeah, let's go to the list. So you've got one more question for me in our little quiz about the Harvard Business Review's 10 must-reads on leadership?
I do. Let's see. What do I have for you?
A torturous question, no doubt.
These are questions that you won't find very hard because they're not, I'm not asking you to know things. I'm asking you to respond. Mm-hmm. In an article on discovering your authentic leadership, mm-hmm. let me ask you some of the 8 questions that they've asked.
Sure.
Which people and experiences in your early life had the greatest impact on you?
Well, clearly my father, because I just loved that despite being a Holocaust survivor, he never played victim. He just never complained, and he just, I've said it a million times on the show, but it's true. You ask him this question. So he says, Martin, the Nazis took 5 years from my life. I won't give him 1 minute more. Never look back, always move forward. And that, Hey, whenever I complain about the crap that's happened in my life, I stop myself if I can think of my dad and say, no, if he could deal with the Holocaust in 5 years, that I how idiotic for me to complain and, you know, play victim about it. I gotta move forward. That's been the most, by far, the most important impact on my life.
Yep. And then question three is really the same question where they say, what are your most deeply held values? I think you answered that in number one.
Well, it's not that my most deeply held value is that is being productive matters. When I could have fun my whole life by watching videos, eating, taking hikes with Einstein, playing on the floor, getting on the floor with Einstein, letting him lick my face, but I wouldn't have made that much difference. And I feel like the more I work, the more articles I write, the more clients I see. You know, I believe in the power of work. I think that's what adds so much to the life well led. That's my core value.
Okay. What motivates you extrinsically?
Nothing. I am not motivated by money. I'm not, you know, I guess we all like praise. I value praise. I value being respected. Yeah. That's not unusual, like most people. But not money. I'm not money or at all motivated. None.
What kind of a support team do you have?
None. You when you're in a good mood.
At least once a month.
Right.
Is your life integrated? Are you able to be the same person in all aspects of your life?
Absolutely. I'm exactly the same on the radio as I am with you. Amanda, is that fair?
What, yes.
The way I am, except I'm a little more energetic because I love being on the radio. But other than that, you know, like last night when we were together or whatever, I'm no different, right?
True.
Okay.
What steps can you take today, tomorrow, and over the next year to develop your authentic leadership?
It's to be less authentic. I've gotten in so much trouble for being too authentic. You know, you speak about what you really care about, and unless it falls into a very narrow orthodoxy, you pay a huge price. There is tremendous censorship of anything that falls beyond the what is au courant in the zeitgeist of the era. So, to be honest, I've been too authentic. I need to be a little less authentic and know when to speak and when to shut up.
Good point. That is a really good point. Okay, I think that's enough questions for you. What do you think?
Okay, so now what I want to do is I've got a little quiz for you that I think is, I'm going to give you a choice. We can either, I feel like giving you the quiz first.
Oh, well.
Yeah, but they're not quizzes, this is more self-rating. You got this 24.9 out of 25 from your school board for your salary evaluation. But my little criteria, I've got 11 here. They're not so easy. They're tougher, I think. And I don't know what your other 25, but these are pretty tough. I want you to rate yourself A, B. We're going to go really quickly through these because I don't want to spend a lot of time on it. But rate yourself A, B, C, D, or F with a one-sentence or two-sentence explanation for why you give yourself the letter grade, okay? Number one, are you a visionary? Are you not only bold but accurate in creating big-picture initiatives?
That's interesting because sometimes I would say definitely not, and yet right now I think I am being pretty visionary in going after the preschool as a huge initiative to try and help kids come to school better, prepare to learn, so we won't be remediating them for the next 12 years.
So you're going to give yourself a B for that?
I'm going to give myself an A-.
Here, okay. By the way, dear listeners, this is not about Barbara Nemco. I'm mentioning these. These are attributes of leadership that I believe are most important. So I invite you to score yourself on each of these and see if there's one or more areas that you would like to go. I'm only playing interactively with Barbara to make it a little more entertaining than if we simply list them, okay?
Oh, so then let me, I want to add something to that answer.
Great.
Because it's exactly what we've been talking about. So I'm really good about saying, okay, I think this has tremendous promise and I think we really need to do this. And getting the people on the team to agree that, you know, okay, because initially they went, huh, I don't know, iPads, preschool kids, not so sure. But what I would not be good at is the implementation of going out and setting up all these meetings and training all these parents and training all these teachers and making sure that it's really working. And so that's where the team came in.
Right.
And set up all of these opportunities for parents to come and learn and set up having the right people there when the parents come. So we have someone from technology in case somebody's their iPad or their smartphone doesn't work. We have people from curriculum. We have people to translate into Spanish. that kind of organizational ability is not my strong suit. But together, between the vision and what they're doing, we're really making it work.
Okay. Now, second question on the self-rating scale. Do you hire slow and fire fast? Take the time, really take the time to find a good person. And then if they're not working out, study after study shows that you really, after a modest amount of attempt to remediate them, if it doesn't not showing much signs of improvement, that you do cut your losses. How would you rate yourself on hire slow, fire fast?
Well, I'm going to give myself a C because of something... hire that I made in the past that wasn't so good, and it took a couple of years until we fired, well, or until we changed that. I'm only going to give myself a C on that, but I'm learning.
Okay, next question. Integrity. I'm not just talking about stealing, but integrity means giving honest negative feedback when necessary, saying a crisp no. I mean, one of my most memorable moments on this show was when I interviewed Jack Welch, the CEO of GE, and I asked him, you know, you are denigrated, while you're praised as being a leading CEO, you're criticized for being Neutron Jack and, you know, getting rid of a lot of people and being negative and whatever. And I asked him, how do you feel about being called Neutron Jack? And he said, very proud. He said, not everybody is meant to work for GE. When I first took over GE, our refrigerators were the least reliable. We had crappy products. And when I left, our products are the best. And so do you feel that you have integrity, including giving honest negative feedback when necessary, crisply saying no when somebody's asking for money and you don't feel you should give it?
No, but I'm part of a team. And I have people on my team who can do that.
Okay. And so what letter grade would you give yourself?
Well, it depends. If you personally, am I good at that? I'd give myself a D.
Okay.
But as someone who's in an organization, I'd give myself an A.
But do you need to do that yourself? Because you can't always delegate that. You know, the leadership is at the top. Don't you have to say no sometimes?
No, because those kinds of things don't usually come to me unless somebody's trying to do an end run.
All right. Next question in my leadership criteria. So you're not going to get 24.9 out of 25 on my criteria.
This doesn't surprise me.
Yes, exactly. Okay. Do you lead collaboratively and yet you'll crisply make decisions?
Yes. I'm going to give myself an A+ on that.
Okay. Good. Next one. Do you adjust the job description of people when you're writing a job description for something? Do you adjust the job description, not just for the needs of the organization, but everybody's got strengths and weaknesses? Do you adjust the job description to match the strengths of the applicant, of the winning applicant, of the person who's going to get the job?
No, because in a large organization like this, there are fairly standardized job descriptions that get updated, but you can't really take one person's job description and change that. It would upset the whole culture of the organization and the way, no, you can't do that.
So you got to get an F on that, huh?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Oh, boy, we're going to give you a salary cut. If we use these salary criteria to evaluate you, we'd have to cut your salary.
Said by somebody who works by himself and is not in the middle of an organization of over 200 people.
That's why I work for myself. I love the control of that.
Exactly.
Okay, how would you rate yourself on this one? You readily admit your failures, learn from them, and move on and not beat yourself up.
I'm getting better at that. Yeah, I'd give myself an A-.
Okay. And again, dear listeners, this is not about Barbara Nemco. She is merely the vessel, the vehicle. I'm hoping that you are writing your own, rating yourself on these and see maybe there is an area for growth for you. Next one, number 7 out of 11 questions. Do you respond well to others' failures? You choose when to ignore them, you choose when to discuss them, and then you don't hold a grudge.
Yes.
I know a couple of people you hold a grudge against, dear Dr. Nemco.
You do.
You are not getting an A from me on that. You're getting a B.
Oh,
okay.
Boo.
Number 8.
Oh, well, this will be an interesting offline conversation. I can't wait to hear
you. You know who we're talking about. Moving on. Number 8. Are you able to read, and this is what you were talked about earlier about in one of the chapters of the book, do you sufficiently read when people are unhappy? And know what you figure out how to turn them around from unhappy to at least reasonably satisfied.
I think so, yes.
Okay. Number, and so A?
Yeah.
All right. Do you, as I suggested earlier, take a moderate approach to change? You're not the earliest adopter who's jumping on the bandwagon quickly, but you're also not a stick in the mud who's just wanting to do things the same old way forever.
Yes.
Okay. Hey, good. Number 10, do you take time to reflect, to think strategically about your organization, about your immediate supervisees and their lives and their job descriptions and their work? Do you think about yourself in the arc of your own career? And including, do you use hard data like surveys where appropriate? Do you take time to reflect?
I think I probably reflect regularly. Have I sent out a 360 evaluation? No. But that's more because I find it so annoying to get them. I don't want to annoy anybody else.
But you've told me that you don't sit and reflect very often. You know, we've read very often that it's wise to take a few minutes every Friday afternoon or Friday morning to sit for 5 minutes uninterrupted and just think about your career, about your office, about the strategic stuff. You've told me you don't do that. Am I wrong?
Well, I don't sit down and say to myself, okay, now you're going to sit here for the next 5 minutes and you're going to reflect on yourself and your organization.
I'm giving you a B.
All the time.
I'm giving you a B, no A for that.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
Okay, all right. We'll compromise. B plus or A minus, which one you
a
want?
Minus.
A minus, all right. Last question. Do you balance humility with will? That's a balancing act that's very important. Do you believe you balance humility with will and drive?
Yes.
Okay, good. So I'm just going to eyeball this. And out of the 11 questions, I would say that gives you roughly an A minus, like a 91 or a 92 on the scale. So I wouldn't give you a huge raise, but I'd give you a moderate raise. What do you think? Am I being too tough?
Thanks a heap. I'm glad you're not on my board.
Anyway, but you know who's on board? My dear listeners at KALW. I really do value you. You have no idea. You know, it is a privilege to be talking with you and hopefully trying to add value to your lives. And this is the one of the 6 minutes. Now we've only got about 4 minutes of it. You know, 2 minutes now and 2 minutes at the end of the show. I need to ask you to support me. And support the show. If you like, if you hate the show, of course not. But if you do...
If you hate the show, why would you be listening?
Well, sometimes we're all a little bit masochistic. But if you actually do like work with...
If you hate the show, turn it off.
Right. But if you do... Right, exactly. If you do like work with Marty Nemko and Barbara Nemko, one or the other, or both of us, and feel it's either been entertaining or you've gained something from it, this is the only time we do ask you to support us and support KALW. For $60, the basic membership is $50, you get a new member welcome pack. But for just $10 more, you get an autographed copy of my book, How to Do Life, What They Didn't Teach You in School, and something that I swear is just wonderful. On July 13th, you can come to the KALW studios and come and have brunch with us. You can watch the show right in the studio with Barbara and me on July 13th, and then we have a lovely brunch, a great networking opportunity, great fun, and it's $150 for one person, $250 for a couple, and the good feeling of supporting work with Marty Nemko and KALW Public Radio, which we are all fans of. The phone number, 1-800-525-9917. There are wonderful volunteers who will be pleasantly happy to take your pledge and your comments about work with Marty Nemko and Barbara Nemko. 1-800-525-9917, or spelled out differently, 1-800-KALW 917. Or if you'd rather not talk to our friendly volunteers, you can go to KALW.org, pay by credit card, check, whatever it is. So Barbara...
And one of the people who comes to that brunch is going to win a copy of the Harvard Business Review's 10 Must Reads on Leadership.
Okay. And I've also just found out that there is a challenge.
Ooh. If, I love a challenge.
If people will donate $350 between, it doesn't be one person, you know, you donate what you feel you can, Richard Moe in Kensington and Martha and George Robin in San Francisco have combined to challenge us to raise $350 only in this right now.
Ooh.
So, you know, if you are supportive of the show, your dollars will go twice as far. So 1-800-525-9917. I want to thank, by the way, Nancy in San Francisco for her generous donation and comments. 1-800-525-9917, or go to KALW.org. Come to brunch with us on July 13th. Barbara, you want to add one thing before? I like to keep these pledge breaks short. I know that's one of the great things about KELW. We respect you, our listeners. We know you'd rather hear programming than hear us ask for money, but we really need to. So, Barbara, you want to add one little brief thing?
Yes. People who come to the brunch have always had a great time. In fact, we have lots of people who come back
absolutely
2, 3, and 4 times.
Yep. And it's not that many people, so it's a friendly, nice size. It's usually about a dozen people,
right.
So it's
and
very
great
friendly.
Food.
Yeah, and great food. 1-800-525-9917 or KALW.org. Okay. Now, Barb, let us go and end this with one of our switch sides debates. We've done this many times, and again, I'm trying to be responsive, as always, to the listeners. They like it when we have these debates where I take one side of the debate for the first half of the debate, and then I take the other side for the second half of the debate. So it's not which one of us wins, it's which argument is stronger. And so what I thought we would do one of our switch sides debates on is the question of, should managers and leaders err on the side of bold leadership or err on the side of collaborative decision-making? Okay? I'll read it again. It's a little complicated, so I'll say it again for the listeners and for you. Should managers and leaders err on the side of being bold or on the side more of collaboration in decision-making? Which side do you want to go first? Do you want me to go first? Whatever you want, Bess. On which side do you want to take? I don't care.
Well, why not go first? I'll start by saying that collaborative leadership is a much better way to go.
Okay, go ahead.
We all agree that one person cannot possibly have every quality that's required to be a good leader. When you have collaborative leadership, it allows you to figure out where your strengths and weaknesses are and where other people's strengths would be a good complement to your weakness. And that enables you to cover the waterfront of having all the qualities that are needed to move an organization forward. Also, it makes things so much more pleasant for the people that you're working with when they are included, when they feel that whatever the vision is part of their vision. It's very hard for people to be passionate and enthusiastic beside somebody else's vision. I remember a superintendent coming back from a conference and saying, I have to be careful what I say because I hate it when people come home all excited from a conference I wasn't invited to. Mm-hmm. So we don't want to just jump on and follow somebody else someplace. We need to be taken along until it becomes part of our own vision, and you can't do that without collaborative leadership. It also models well for the other people in the organization that we are all part of this team. This is not just a job. We're a team. We're trying to make something happen, whether it's a better product or a better service. And it only works if every part of the organization feels the need to do that and feels the passion.
Okay, great. So now I'm going to take the other side, and I'm going to argue why a more authoritative sweater, you know, of course, it's not all or nothing, but why it's wiser for a leader to err on the side of bold individual leadership, him or he or she being this bold leader, rather than being collaborative. You know, everybody is not the same. Now, while, of course, some people rise to the top of an organization because they schmoozed their way to the top or slept their way to the top or whatever, in general, it is a Darwinian, for better or worse, process by which the smartest, hardest working, most visionary, most political, which is important in getting stuff done, rise to the top. And so for a leader to err, at least on the side of being bold, means that the decision is going to be based on that one of that perhaps most, you know, the sharpest tool in that shed, rather than a collaborative process, which in order to get collaborative consensus, there tends to be this dumbing down, this kind of sharpening, rounding off the edges so that the ideas are less bold and there's something that is so pablum-like that it can be accepted by everybody. And also simply the fact that a consensus process is slow. Not only does that mean in an organization that things move slowly, but what happens is when everything's got to be decided by consensus, you've got everything. The organization is slow moving, and it makes everybody not feel excited and invigorated to be there. It feels just molasses-like. So that's why in this half of the debate, I'm arguing for bold leadership. Now let's switch sides, and now I'm going to take the side of collaborative leadership,
okay.
And then you close by going for the individual one. Okay. Now, what it is, nobody wants to feel disempowered. And it's very important. People, if they are demotivated at work, if they feel like they don't matter and they're just being led around like on a noose, they're just going to be demotivated. That's something we learned in the 50s. You can't just, say, do this, do this, do this, and expect a workforce that's going to be helpful. And in the end, the organization is going to be worse. So we're not saying pure collaboration, but as we said, the proposition is erring on the side of collaboration. That's going to not only be good for the organization, but human beings matter too. If somebody is asked what they think about something and they're really heard, that makes them feel good about their lives. They come back to their families feeling better, and that should matter too. Also, the reality is that all wisdom does not reside within the leader, no matter how smart or whatever. Crowdsourcing has become popular for a reason. Wikipedia has taken the place of the Encyclopedia Britannica because it is crowdsourced. There's so much information. Open source software that has been developed by so many entities, Linux and whatever, and Mozilla's Firefox is the collaborative result of thousands of people's efforts and become better because it's crowdsourced. So that's what collaborative leadership is, bringing out the best in everybody. And that's why I am, in this part of the argument, arguing for erring on the side of collaborative leadership. Now you argue for individuals to close
well,
out.
Well, I'm going to say that bold leadership is really critical because everything needs a face, and the face is going to be the face of that bold leader. A whole organization cannot be doesn't have the opportunity to be out there in the same way. It's the leader who gets the focus and is able to articulate very clearly exactly what the vision is. The people who are working and supporting all that may only see a piece of it, but it is the bold leader who sees the big picture, kind of standing out there on the balcony and looking down, and can inspire other people. It takes somebody who has that gift of being able to get people excited so that instead of fighting what the new direction is, they are excitedly trying to make it happen. And if you are waiting for everybody to get on board, everybody isn't always going to get on board. There are going to be some people who are going to give you 10 good reasons why it's the dumbest thing they ever heard of. And if you believe that it's a really good thing to do, then you are confident that they will come along. But if you have to wait to start it until they come along, they may never get to see what it looks like, and so they're going to be stuck in their ways and slow things down.
Okay, dear listeners, I do hope that this we try to create these little innovations like the switch side of debate. So instead of rooting for Barbara or me, we did our very best. What?
I hope they're rooting for me.
But we both have taken both sides of the debate, and hopefully that has helped you get a little clearer about whether you want to be a little more erring on the side of collaboration or bold leadership. We live in an era and a part of the country where collaboration is deified. And it has, as I've tried to fervently argue, has its many advantages, but it also has many disadvantages. And that's what we try to do on Work with Marty Nemco. There tends to be this sense of narrowness that in public radio is the opposite of what public radio is about. Public radio is recognized that wisdom resides in multiple locations, not in one. And there is somebody now who's going to join us who is this station's lead champion for that whole concept of what makes public radio special. So it's my pleasure to introduce station manager Matt Martin.
Hey, Marty, great to be here with you. And that idea of there being something brilliant about a broad base of support and a broad base of ideas and information. Now, obviously on the station, we like to have a lot of different viewpoints represented in our programming. But we also believe that this station is much, much stronger when many, many people get involved. And when we do these campaigns of asking for support just twice a year, the most important thing we say is not how much you give, but that you get involved. Just now, we had a room full of volunteers, people like you, answering all the phones were lit. That is the most beautiful and important thing that happens during these campaigns, because that is people coming together for something they value. And that is what we're asking you to do in these final moments of the program here with Marty.
And the operative words are final moments. This is, you know, if you do like work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco, this is the only time. These next 3 minutes is your time to show it. Every dollar is a vote for public radio in general, for KALW, and this, for these 3 minutes alone, work with Marty Nemco. And we try to make it a little bit of inducement, because some of it is intrinsic motivation and some of it is, we all like rewards. So while the basic membership's $50 for your new member, you'll get this brand new, cool, nifty welcoming pack. You also, for a mere $10 more, you will get an autographed copy of my book, How to Do Life, What They Didn't Teach You in School, and the coup de grace, the brunch, which is something we really love. Barbara Nemco and I, we've been doing this for years, and it is, we think it's a good service to the station and to you, and fun. You come on July 13th. You can watch the show if you want right here in the studio, see Barbara and me argue with each other and whatever we tend to do about your work life, and then stay for brunch. We serve a lovely brunch, and it's great networking and great fun. Matt, anything you want to say?
800-525-9917.
Thank you.
800-525-9917. Right now, if you are a fan of this program, if you think it delivers something valuable to the community in terms of Marty and the guests that he brings on, of course, Barbara as well, well, now is the time to show it and keep it strong. 800-525-9917. And all the things that Marty mentioned are also at our website, KALW.org. More and more people. That's the way you do things, is online. Fine. Either way you show your support, it makes a huge difference. But right now, we can't afford to have an open line. 800-525-9917.
You know what I find interesting? Really, people do tend to break into two categories. There are people. Like when I go, I just was in Trader Joe's, and there are no automated checkers. And part of why I like to go into Trader Joe's is it's fun to talk to the checkers, but there are other people, and those are the people who are going to call 1-800-525-9917, because there are these very friendly, nice volunteers who actually have been volunteering for years. They're really loyal KALW listeners, great people. But there are those who prefer, for example, in Safeway, to go on the self-checkout line so they don't have to interact with the checker. And if you're, you know, not that social and you'd prefer to become a member of KALW or renew your membership, you don't have to talk to our nice volunteers. You can go to KALW.org.
And either way you do it, the last thing that happens when you give your gift is we ask for your comments.
Mm, right.
And that is one of the things about, you know, we don't have a national broadcasting system that's out of Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. We have a diverse and decentralized system. We love having the independence here to bring on Marty Show, to bring on Philosophy Talk, Le Show with Harry Shearer coming up. And that diversity is possible because we have support at the grassroots. So be the next person to vote for that, not just to vote for it, to make it a reality into the future when you make that call or click. And we do not interrupt the programming. That's the independence we have here. We can do it our way with your support. 800-525-9917.
It's human. You know, KLW is small.
But
real. It's human. You know, the station managers at many other stations don't come on a Sunday morning to sit here. They don't take comments from each person. I've been here now, it'll be 25 years October 1st. Mm. If it's one word that defines it is not bureaucratic. 1-800-525-9917. Come to this is the last minute, and we're going to stop and end. We got to end. And so I want to thank you, Matt Martin, for coming in and being a truly, really well-respected, probably the most respected station manager that's been here in my 25 years.
Well, it's a great community. And it's, of course, the people who are on the microphone, the folks everybody knows, but it goes out from that. The folks who are volunteering in the phone room, all the people who give their support really define this institution, and it's the participation of people during these membership campaigns is where that starts.
And it's all about you. We are part of that community. 1-800-525-9917. Come to brunch. I swear it's fun. 1-800-525-9917. And that is Work with Marty Nemco for this week. I want to thank Matt Martin for coming in. I appreciate it on Sunday. Joanne Marr, my board operator. But most of all, for all of you, whether you can afford to contribute or not, I am honored by your listenership. Please join me again next Sunday at 11. I will do 3-minute workovers on calls, and Making a Living as an Interviewer. I'll talk with C-SPAN's longtime head interviewer, Brian Lamb. He's interviewed everyone from Malcolm Gladwell to Isabel Wilkerson to Christopher Hitchens. Until next Sunday, this is Marty Nemko reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't. And happy Mother's Day to you, Barbara, and to everybody.